Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back for a second episode this week to talk about the 2018 documentary on the All Blacks on Amazon, All or Nothing. Since we're in lockdown, we've had the time to watch it and yeah, we're gonna cast our eyes over it. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And hello, JB.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm all right. So let's get straight into this documentary then. Did you enjoy it, or did you find it a bit of a slog to get through?
It was painful, wasn't it?
He'd blunt.
Oh, I'd tell you what. I actually quite enjoyed it.
Did you?
Yeah, I really did. I found myself kind of smiling a few times.
For the wrong reasons, though.
Sometimes for the wrong reasons. Yeah. I was cringing at some of Hansen's painful banter with some of the players and some of his other coaches. But overall, genuinely, I quite enjoyed it. Now, a big proportion of that is me particularly enjoying slow motion shots of Sonny Bill Williams in training kit, real kit, in the gym, any slow motion shots of Sonny Bill running around.
You know, the action shots of them playing actual real life test match rugby really got me excited. For some reason, those shots really captured the brutality of the sport, but they lasted about 3 seconds. Other than that, it was difficult.
I think in episode one, Phil, you talk about that. I thought I'm going to enjoy this when I think it was in episode one, it maybe within 10 minutes, Steve Hansen went up to Sonny Bill Williams and said, hey, mate, what's going on with your shorts? Because I think basically they were so tight they'd ripped.
Did you hear what Sonny Bill's response was?
I'm too powerful.
Yeah, he said too much power, boss, or something like that, which I thought was brilliant.
No, it's just he's shopping in the kids section. That's the problem.
So the point where I lost interest in this documentary was 6.5 minutes in. And it was this line. The most important job is being a dad. No. The most important job, Ben Smith, is making sure that you catch high balls. Almost anyone can be a dad. Nobody can catch high balls like Ben Smith, or very few people. Very few people. I hate that saying so much. It's like it's come from a bloody personal advert or Dove Men Care.
We did get that 3 times from Bender, from Kieran Reid, and from Lima.
Who is Bender, by the way? Because my notes, it just says Jesus Bender.
Ben Smith. Bender.
Oh, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Right. Bender. Yeah. So it's been 2 weeks since I've watched the damn thing, so I'm just trying to work out what we actually need.
Steve Hansen had nicknames for everyone. I loved it. So Sonny Bill Williams, when he went up to him and talked to him about the shorts, he called Sonny Bill Williams Cobbler. Did you notice his nickname for Geordie Barrett?
No.
Big Nuts.
Huh? Big Nuts.
He called Geordie Barrett Big Nuts. I think Steve Hansen is the star of this documentary. He came out. I really, really like the guy.
So Hansen was one of the people I didn't like. There were so many people I really liked. I loved Bender, TJ, Aaron Smith, really liked them. I really liked Lima Sopoanga.
Yeah.
Ryan Crotty, I've always had a thing for Ryan Crotty.
Yeah, Ryan Crotty's cool, isn't he?
Sonny Bill. I loved Sonny Bill as well. But yeah, Hansen was one of the few who I wasn't too sure, I didn't warm to. Hanson and Kieran Reid, actually, I didn't warm to. And Kieran Reid,
I find Kieran Reid a prickly customer.
So Kieran Reid puts on this false smile.
Yes.
For everything, no matter
his what eyes give him away.
Yeah, his eyes give him away. But no matter what he's being asked and what he's saying, he has the same false smile. Whether it's talking about his kids, beating South Africa,
maybe he's had Botox.
Maybe might have had some work done.
It's his permigrin, and I wonder if it's because they are so important to that nation that they can't put a foot wrong.
Well, you see, that was a big insight for me. Was there was I think in maybe the third episode where Steve Hansen was having to put up fencing all around his house because otherwise the paparazzis were taking photos of him all the time. And you're like, Eddie Jones doesn't have to put up with that. No rugby player in England has to put up with that. But the head coach of New Zealand is like the most famous person in the whole country.
Yes, yeah. I guess that does make it a little bit different. But they act like, not politicians. No, well, they act like they are. They're megastars. But the megastars in a very, very small country.
Yeah, but they are. They are absolute megastars in New Zealand.
I have a question. If they are so lauded, right? If they're so great, why is their bus so terrible?
I did. So on, I can't remember what episode it was, but first or second episode, they have a little chat with a bus driver. And I was like, oh, this is going to be painful. You're not going to talk about this. You're not going to talk to the strength and conditioning coach, the forwards coach, the back, the skills coach. You're going to talk to the bus driver. But saying that, they got some time with Wayne Smith. They got time with Fozzie, who we might come on to in a little bit. They got some time with the forwards coach talking about the scrum and Joe Moody talking about the scrum, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So, what was that?
About
one of the later episodes.
4 or 5.
Oh, yeah. I've not got past episode 1. just go back to this bus, right? Because I want to talk about this in some detail. I wasn't sure if the bus was like everything in New Zealand, just it's a little bit behind and therefore it's a little bit Spartan. Or was it Spartan because that is the All Blacks brand, which is no fuss? Because I've been in London now, and this must have been about 8 years ago, and coming towards me was the bus from the Ospreys. And I don't know why the Ospreys bus was in London. No, this is before the days of RGC. It looked like the Death Star. It was fully wrapped. It had like Shane Williams' face on the side of it, blotted out windows. It looked incredible. In fact, a lot of these buses look incredible. The All Blacks bus is just, well, it's rubbish. It's like one of those buses that they get, you know, well, 10 years ago, they used to shuffle kids on to go to swimming lessons.
JB. Yeah. It's culture. It's like they explained that you have to be a relatively senior player to not get on by the front steps and go to the middle of the bus to get on, and you only get to sit on the back row if you are like legend status, Sam Whitelock, Kieran Reid level.
No, you're wrong.
Not Kieran Reid, because he's got to sit near the front because he's the captain.
No, he's not allowed to sit in the back because he's captain.
He sits near the back,
but not on the back.
On the back seats, because he's the captain.
Yeah.
Presumably he might snitch.
Yeah, I can tell. He might be a snitch. Yeah.
Can we talk about some big picture stuff for a minute, like the documentary in general? So clearly this is aimed at an audience that will be, you know, rugby fans and also trying to make it accessible for non-rugby fans. Yeah. Clearly, one of the ways rugby can help itself is by just adding Rocky-esque sound effects to rugby footage.
The drum beat at every tackle, a boom, for every hit.
They even added a sound effect of, I noticed, of Rico Ioane scratching his chin.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I really noticed this. We should have got some drum each for me saying something meaningful in this conversation. We could have a boom.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting point you raised, Tim. Who is this documentary for? Because it's not for rugby fans. I didn't learn a single thing from episode 1.
The, There was bits to take out of there, but not huge amounts. It was for casual rugby fans and non-rugby fans, like people who've never watched a game of rugby before. There's parts of it that were definitely tailored to the American market.
People are watching that in the same way that I'm watching the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary.
Yes.
That's what it's for.
It was cool seeing the Lions tour from the perspective of the baddies. It was cool seeing a documentary from the perspective of the bad guys.
Yeah, you would expect with the all in black for the turnaround switch and go, we are the bad guys, right?
Oh, they were the bad guys. And Sonny Bill with his in test two. Sonny Bill's the bad guy.
Yeah, I didn't realise that we're going to cover like really good things. I thought it was going to be a little bit like do the NFL Hard Knocks, so they don't actually cover any good games.
Yeah.
Just pre-season. But no, they actually got into the weeds. One of the things it has taken from Hard Knocks, I don't know really what to make of this, for whatever reason it makes for great TV, is close-ups of things which have nothing to do with the actual sport. So we were treated in episode one to a good 20 seconds of sewing machines, real high-definition, close-up shots of sewing machines. And it worked. Hard Knocks do sprinklers a lot.
But also, they understand, like we've mentioned Sonny Bill a lot already, but it was 27 seconds into this documentary before there was a topless shot of Sonny Bill.
Yeah, right. Too long, if anything.
Yeah. And then they used in the opening little monologue, they used the quote, rugby is the most physically demanding sport on the planet. So I just thought briefly, is that a fair statement, do you think?
Cross-country skiing is meant to be.
No, you got it wrong, Phil. Biathlon is what you meant to say.
Biathlon. Yeah, so cross-country skiing with shooting as well.
Correct. Otherwise, you've just got half a biathlon. Well, that's not very hard, is it?
Yeah. Cross-country skiers are supposed to be the athletes with the highest VO2 max. So I'll say that as most physically demanding.
I thought it was rowers.
I think those two are hotly contested, but cross-country skiers is right up there.
Interesting. So I've heard when I was doing AS level PE, the fittest athletes, as in the overall fitter, so basically CrossFitters, right? In that sense of the word fitness, strength, endurance, you know, the whole lot. Pole vaulters.
Yeah.
They've got to be strong, they've got to be explosive, they've got to be quick, but not too heavy.
Like gymnastic strength and sprinter speed.
Yeah. Although they wouldn't be trained for, say, a 5K or a 10K.
Yes.
But you need to be light, which would help with that kind of stuff.
If they had to run away from someone trying to murder them with a knife, they might get caught eventually.
Eventually.
Unless there's a ditch in the way.
I'd love to have a go at pole vaulting.
I wouldn't. God,
I'd love to just observe. How do you transition? How do you go from basically doing the high jump to the real thing? What's your first pole drop, pole vault like?
That's a great shout.
How did you discover that you were good at it?
Geez.
So I think it's fairly, maybe it's not the most physically demanding single activity. But no, it is over the course of a season, it must be.
If it's not the single, you could definitely create a metric that would put rugby at the top.
They definitely, like, bearing in mind the way rugby's gone and the controversy around the contact area and everything, they, as you said, and I think it was for that American market, but also to market, clearly, what point I'm trying to make is, to market rugby in this documentary, they turned the contact element up as high as they could. Because as you said, the shots of the games were done from a perspective where they just focused on the massive hits. They added Rocky-esque sound effects on to make it seem like more physical.
And I tell you another weird thing, and I wonder if they'd do it if they made that documentary today, which is the focus on Ben Smith's concussion. Now, I wonder if it was made, and I'm just trying to cast my mind back to when concussion... I mean, I know it's always been serious, but it's never been, you know, front and center. That used to be, you know, neck damage from the scrum, which weirdly went away. I wonder if they made it today, if they would have made such a big song and dance about Ben Smith's concussion and instead spoken about, you know, the protocols around the concussion, how they're looking to protect him. Because it did feel very open and honest about that angle of the game. Maybe too much so.
Maybe that is reflective of who was making this, as in it was made by a TV crew who don't hugely know rugby, and presumably World Rugby weren't involved.
Yeah,
so maybe there would have been more of the welfare if it was from a different angle.
There was more focus on him being a good dad and less on his concussions.
there was a bit more concussion later on with Beauden Barrett getting taken out in the South Africa game.
Yeah.
Or one of the South Africa games. But Tim, you mentioned before, like the time that this was. So it was 2017, which is obviously a Lions year. So there was the three Lions games. There'd been obviously the Super Rugby that season. And then you had the Rugby Championship as well. And it shows the brutality of the test matches and the fixtures in that year for these guys. I mean, it's a serious, serious playing schedule that, and when you bear in mind that a load of the players played for their provinces or their regions against the Lions after having a 16-week or whatever it was, Super Rugby season.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot of games.
You've already mentioned you've had a long-held man crush on Ryan Crotty, but it was interesting to see, because this was at the period where Ryan Crotty was coming off the back of having been dropped for the World Cup previously and had been out in the cold with the All Blacks and got brought back in. And that was just, you had this really great little juxtaposition between what happened to Julian Surveyor when he got dropped for Rico Ioane. Surveyor just went, right, that's it, I'm done now, I'm off to France.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Hello?
No, I'm saying bye, guys.
I thought you cut off and come back in. But it speaks to the character of Ryan Crotty and some of the mentality of some of these guys.
Maybe he just never wanted to leave home. I mean, that's also a thing. And maybe Julian Surveyor really wanted to go to France.
Maybe.
Well, it was interesting to see that. This is one of the things I did take out of it. The difference in mentalities. So that's a really good example of Surveyor Crotty. But they spoke about, Hansen spoke early on about Sonny Bill Williams and what a model professional he is and how great he is to have around the camp, because he's always doing the extras and he's in the gym and everyone can look up to him. And then on, I can't remember which episode three or episode four, they just beaten Australia twice, Bledisloe 1 and 2, beaten them in Dunedin, and they were travelling to Argentina. So it was like straight up next job. And on the Monday morning meeting, Hansen asks, how many people have prepared? How many people have looked at anything of Argentina in this last week? And only 3 people stood up out of a squad of 30.
Wow.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Did you notice who those 3 people were, Tim?
No, I didn't. No.
Or Jay, do you want to guess who the 3 people would be?
Sonny Bill.
No.
Oh.
Bodie.
Not Bodie. No.
Aaron Smith.
Aaron Smith, yes. Aaron Smith. You can see why they like Aaron Smith, and I love TJ Perenara, being a Canes fan, but I think Aaron Smith is a cut above even TJ.
Who are the Boy Scouts? Someone like Whitelock or Italic, I guess.
Right position.
Scott Barrett.
No, you probably won't get it now.
Don't know.
I think he's not playing. I don't think he made the World Cup squad.
Oh, what's his face? The massive. The giant lock fella.
Not Tui Pilotu.
No.
Luke Romano.
Ah.
And the other one was Kieran Reid, of course. Yeah. Teacher's pet. Yeah, I thought that was interesting, definitely Hansen wanted to push that that mentality, but not all of them had it at all times.
Yeah, and he let rip several times during this documentary, and just at one point said, if you just want to be an All Black, come see me. I'm not interested. I'm only interested in people that want to be, you know, great All Blacks.
The best.
You know, yeah. We've got to raise the standards. And, you know, this is a team that just won a World Cup. But also, so they were coming off the back of the Lions tour, like absolutely devastated that they'd got a draw.
Yeah, true.
Mainly devastated with Romain Poix.
Oh, it was a bad decision. It only reminded me how lucky the Lions were in that final test.
Make your own luck.
Romain Poix calling offside against Ken Owens, and then just the way he did it, the way he went back on it. Oh,
yeah,
that was bad.
Offside against Kieran Reid to start with from the kickoff.
Kieran Reid clattered into Liam Williams as well, who's going up for the high ball. So, yeah, watching that back still makes me laugh when just thinking Kieran Reid like. Slaps.
I love it. It's my favorite.
Was it Romain? Romain.
Yeah. He's like, oh, that's football, guys. That's all it is.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. Hey, it's how the cookie crumbles. What? What do you mean?
You can't do it. Romain. You can't.
Romain.
Oh, it's great to see that again.
But also, there's the was it the crucial pen that Owen Farrell slotted to win Test 2? Sinclair, like, I just feel so sorry for the New Zealand guy that got penalised because Carl Sinclair jumped in the air when he caught the ball. There's nothing the New Zealand guy could do.
Yeah, it's a law, though. It's a law.
Yeah.
I've just got a note here, and I don't know if you guys can pick up on it, because I don't know what it means. It just says, Hansen's got a chip on his shoulder, and I can't think of why I've written that down, because I can't remember him having one.
I'm not sure. He did.
One is of that the really Gatland? Maybe.
There was a little bit in the first episode about him and Gatland, because there was some Gatland fired some shots, didn't he, about Sonny Bill and Kano.
After Test 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think.
Yeah, Gatland, because it was Kano diving at Conor Murray.
Yes, that was it.
Doing the box kicks.
I think what I'm referring to, I'm just trying to cast my mind back to watching it, is there's quite a lot of everybody hates us in the first, or the implication that everyone wants to beat them or everyone's after them in the first episode.
Which probably is fair.
I think that's a fair comment, really.
Everyone wants to beat New Zealand because so few teams actually do.
I should have paid more attention.
It's cool. But one thing I'd say sort of in general, just on the coach, by the way, before I forget, just on the coach, they have a role of music committee, which they give to the younger guys. Geordie Barrett was in charge of the music. They played a song. And I think one of the guys had said, Sonny Bill had piped up and said, Kieran Reid said, we have a music committee. That's not a role you want. So we give it to the younger guys and we let them know if they pick a bad song. And Geordie Barrett put this song on, which I've never, ever heard in my life. Sounded absolutely awful. And I was thinking, oh, I'm going to get him absolutely rinsed here. And then the next shot is the whole coach singing it. Now, I'm a music broadcaster for the last, 12 years. I've never heard the song they were playing. And it was, it's subjective, but I would say objectively, it was an awful song.
Awful.
when I was playing my rugby at Conwy Bay Rugby Club back in the day, we had two amazing blokes there called Ryan and Tammy. Both of them were flown over to work at someone's local business, but help out the rugby club. Great blokes, great players. And they got really drunk one night, as they did many nights, actually. And they started singing a song. And I can only really describe it as, when the first time you hear it, it sounds like it's like a little bit like Incy Wincy Spider, but it's kind of got like a bit of rhythm to it. Like, what is that horrendous, childish song? Anyway, it's What's the Time, Mr. Wolf? And it is the song which they play over and over again in Once We Were Warriors. Have you ever seen that film?
I know, I've never actually seen it, but I know the film.
Did you know the song?
I don't know the song.
It's not far off a nursery rhyme. And they sing it when they're hammered. Goes on like, what's the time, Mr. Wolf? What's the time? 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. What's the time, Mr. Wolf? What's the time? And it's over and over again.
Love it.
It might have been that then.
Yeah,
Another general observation is just the number of platitudes and cliches that this squad of players spout is quite phenomenal. If there are some people that play rugby for New Zealand that never say anything that isn't a cliche.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I guess they're thinking about it one word at a time.
Exactly.
Take each word as it comes.
I think, yeah. I love Sonny Bill, but I think he might be the best one because everything he said is like, mate, we're just brothers, bro. You know, we're brothers. We rally around each other. You know, if you get, why'd you get knocked down in life, bro? So you can stand back up again, bro.
I loved Sonny Bill in this, but you're 100% right. And then when they're in Argentina and he goes and helps out and it's like cringy, awkward. He's doing a really good thing, but it's still just so cringy and awkward.
What's interesting about Sonny Bill?
Yes.
So Sonny Bill's gone to play for the Wolfpack in Toronto, yeah?
Yeah.
And he's pretty good with the media. As in, he gave a lot of media a lot of time. Do you know the only thing he wouldn't let the media cover?
Family? Kids?
The first time he met his teammates, he said, I want nobody there for the first time that I meet my teammates. I don't know what he had planned for them, whether he's going to read them the Riot Act or tell them to sit down, punks, there's a new sheriff in town. I don't know what he had planned, but he's like, yeah, no one's on, it'll be me and the team. I want to meet my teammates, which I thought was really interesting.
Interesting. I mean, Sonny Bill, he's on lockdown in Manchester.
Is he?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah,
Worsley. That's where he lives. Yeah. I thought he would be in Toronto.
No, genuinely, he's on lockdown in Manchester.
Oh, my goodness.
What was I going to say then? So just on the insight into the All Blacks. So another couple of things that I found interesting. So the red cards, or the red card and subsequent yellow cards.
Yeah.
So I thought it's really interesting, Hansen explaining the decision to take Kano off after the red card.
Yes. So to set the scene, this is in second test and 35 minutes in, Sonny Bill Williams does the high no-armed shot on Anthony Watson. Mm-hmm. In the tackle, gets a red card, and his decision is to take Jerome Kano off and bring on Lau Mappy.
Yeah, and he said it's because they were worried about the Lions' kicking game, so they wanted to have a full back line and therefore a back three, which I thought was really interesting because Kano is one of your biggest, most physical forwards.
Yeah.
And so, and I guess the two things, so that game was in horrendous wet conditions. And the two things that you think about with the Lions team in those conditions are a bloody big pack and a good kicking game. And it was very interesting to see that they clearly feared the ability of the two kickers, the three kickers, Sexton, Sexton, Farrell, Murray and Daly. Yeah, Daly. But they feared that kicking game more than the ability of the pack, which was really interesting to see.
Kano admitted, he said, I didn't understand the decision. I was gutted. But then sort of, you look at it, they were maybe hard done by to lose, playing 55 minutes with a man down.
Yeah, yeah. And they only just lost as well. That decision then, so later on, they were playing Argentina and they brought, Bowden Barrett got yellow carded, and they brought Sopoanga on for Dag, not to retain the full back three. So they were taking off someone in the back three in that, but they retained the full pack, which meant, in my head, that meant that they regarded the Argentina pack higher than the Lions pack because of the decisions they made.
It was inconsistent. Unless they think the Argentine halfbacks are that bad.
Possibly. That would be the other angle.
It was interesting. But Aaron Smith said after that, when they were dissecting the red card and stuff, and they were talking about that decision to do that, Aaron Smith said, so I wrote it down, we plan for a lot in training. We've never planned for a red card. You made a note of that as well, did you, Phil?
I did. I wrote down exactly the same thing.
I couldn't believe that. The double world champions have never planned for playing a game with a man getting a red card.
I guess when you always have the refs on side, you don't.
Yeah, they're in a post-Richie era now, aren't they? They need to get with it.
Yeah, I mean, how many red cards did they have prior to Sonny Bill?
That was 50 first... years since the last.
Yeah.
There you go. No wonder they don't train for it. What sunk cost?
I found that really interesting because I remember when we had Clive Roberts. Clive Griffiths, former Wales coach, former rugby league player, rugby union player, coaching us at Sedgley. We trained. It was a chunk of pre-season was spent planning the defensive patterns for when we were a man down, based on whether we're struggling in the scrum, whether we're dominant in the scrum. Do you put a man into the pack? You leave him out of the pack. Is it a scrum after the scrum after sweep? And all of that. And that's National 1, Level 3, Tier 3.
So presumably the guy you've taken off is busy practicing high shots somewhere.
Exactly the same film.
Yeah.
It was at Bath University. We used to have like a Tuesday... like a classroom session in an auditorium, little video session and stuff. And even at like university Premier League level, the coach used to sort of just do a quiz, used to pick on someone and go, right, we're down a man in the forwards, your fly half, who's your man from a scrum? And because it was always seven takes fly half takes 12, etc. Yeah. So yeah, like even at that, so I was watching that, couldn't believe it. It was cool seeing Steve Hansen. One of the little things they spent a lot of time doing was actually just going, right, giving on the field, just giving them a scenario. Much like that we talked the other week about video game challenges, when they say, right, it's 10 minutes to go in your Japan against South Africa in the 2015 World Cup, you've got to win. Steve Hansen was doing a lot of that. Line out on the 22, 2 points down. 90 seconds to go. What call are you making? Right, let's do it.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So one of the things, it's just reminding me that of Hansen. JB, to your point before about Hansen having a chip on his shoulder, the bit that I've just been reminded about is not Hansen having a chip on his shoulder, but the TV crew wanting to make sure we know how successful Hansen has been. Because about four times in the first two or three episodes, they play the clip of someone on the radio saying, I know he's got the highest winning percentage of an All Black coach, but I just don't think he's doing it right. But constantly reminding you that he's got the highest ever winning percentage for an All Black coach.
And that's a very American stat, isn't it? They love the winningest player, don't they? The win-to-loss ratio is the most important thing.
It was the Australians that did the video of... Were they all laughing at the chance of England winning?
Oh yeah. The Fox Sports England... 2016 England tour down under, yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful stuff.
With a guy spitting his water out. Yes.
Did either of you notice, or I'm not going to ask this to JB because he didn't get this far, but on about episode 4 or 5, I think it's after they beat South Africa, Hansen having a beer with the boys in the changing room afterwards.
Yeah.
And he opens a bottle with another bottle. Which
Yeah.
I love just a really nice little shot. Now,
so then I noticed in series one, episode one. Tell me if you got this impression again from the coach. It feels like when you watch the All Blacks, it is two coaches and a team. Do you know, in all the training shots? Because you only ever see the two coaches, you don't really see strength and conditioning guys. I don't know why, but when I think of a rugby team now, say if I could sell Sharks, you've got a load of players, but you've got a load of other nondescript people in tracksuits and suits and whatnot who you don't know what they do. All the clips of the All Blacks just seem to be all them and two or three coaches. It felt a little bit like watching like a level 8 setup. I know that's not really the case, but that's how they filmed it.
So they did later on, they did get into a bit more of the, you saw time with Wayne Smith and the, I can't remember his name, but the scrum coach, the strength and conditioning coach was on the sidelines in a lot of the games. So you see a bit more of that, but not hugely. I thought it was interesting to see Ian Foster there.
Fozzy,
yeah. Ian Foster, obviously, since Hansen stepped down after the last World Cup, has been appointed.
Nick Gill, Nick Gill was the strength and conditioning coach.
Nick Gill, there you go.
Remember that. You did see him a bit later on, yeah.
Fozzy, and because I think all of us, we didn't know a huge amount about Ian Foster when he was appointed. We probably still don't know a huge amount, but we did see a bit more of him in this, and it would be... So Hansen described him as the yin to his yang early on, and Hansen was a bit more angry and shouty at the players, whereas Fozzy seemed to be a bit more of a nice arm around the players, like when Sopwanga was struggling with his kicking and whatnot, Fozzy was helping him out. But besides that, from what we saw in this, it seems very much like a continuity candidate. Like it's more the same for the All Blacks from a coaching standpoint. We certainly didn't get anything in this that suggested that Ian Foster is going to rip up the rule book and totally fundamentally change things now that he's in charge.
Yeah, quite.
Now, do we have anything else to say on this? Because I have literally nothing more.
On Steve Hansen, I really warmed to him from watching it. It's quite interesting that you didn't so much. I warmed to him quite a lot. I think it was interesting to see the sort of pressure cooker that he lives his life in, and he has got a brilliant. Did he used to be a policeman?
Yeah,
but he commit. Yeah, he was, wasn't he? But you can kind of tell he'd make a great headmaster at a school. I loved it, Damien. Terrible pass, mate. 20 press-ups. I know that sounds more like Eddie Jones than Steve Hansen, but
that did surprise me actually that they do little things like that, little holding yourself to account. 20 press-ups at the pro level.
That felt old school.
Yeah, really old school.
That
felt
so old school, and that was something I did get that he did. Hansen did seem a little bit old school, but I did like just the way he treated players differently. And we only picked up a glimpse of it, and I mentioned it on the previous podcast, but there were times when, like, cynically he was saying, "Oh, you've got to find what this shirt means to you," and that kind of that will get, I don't know, 50-60% of the people in that team on his side, but it will not get all. There'll be people in that team who are looking at that cynically, but then I from what I could see, he was a very good motivator in different ways and got the full team pulling together. Incredible results in this season.
Yeah, he could paint. He painted with a broad brush quite a bit, but he did. He did get out the scalpel from time to time. I'm mixing my metaphors a bit there, but you get the point. Because there was one point where it was Lau Mappi preparing for his first start, and he was just, he just sort of was saying to Aaron Smith and TJ Perenara, stop chopsing at the guy. Stop talking to him. It's his first test match. We've got to trust him. Leave him alone. You do your job. Let him do his.
Yeah. Yeah, stuff like that I did really like, actually. Is there anything...
Oh, sorry, go on. No, I'll just say one thing that this made me feel nostalgic was only a few years ago, Lima Sopawanga was the shit.
Yeah. It's interesting because that team, there's parts of that team just almost feel the same as what we saw in the World Cup, like Reed and Barrett and Aaron Smith and Whitelock and
Ben Smith.
Vitalik and, yeah.
Izzy Dagg.
Ben Smith. Izzy Dagg is a good example of someone that's not around, retired a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
Guys like that, there's a few changes that have come even in that short space of time. Just guys that aren't involved in that setup anymore. Waisaki Naholo is now in the UK. Surveyor's now in France. I thought it was interesting to see that. The change even in a couple of years.
Now, did I hear this right with Lima Sopawanga? At one point, did he say, it's time to rock and I'm ready to roll?
Do you know what? The only note I've got left on my phone here is they're all dressed like untrendy dads, but with Adonis bodies. That quote is exactly how I think of the All Blacks. Incredibly talented, a little bit cringy.
It's a good point on that one. When they go out for dinner on that
so badly dressed.
First episode, what on earth are they wearing?
It's unbelievable. There's an element of like, if Fresh Prince was filmed today, right, they would all be Carlton.
Oh, that's one of my notes, actually. The game, the 57-0 against South Africa. So they hammered in the Rugby Championship first game against South Africa. They hammer them 57-0. And you can draw a direct line from that result to South Africa winning the World Cup.
Great shout.
Because that result was one of a few, but that result is probably the final nail in Alistair Coetzee's coffin. And he got fired at the end of that season. And who steps up?
Yeah, Razzie Erasmus.
So yeah, that there's a direct line between that single game and the successful South Africa World Cup.
I'd love to see this thing done again, but following the Springboks. I find the Springboks a fascinating bunch because I think you wouldn't need to have all of the falseness. I think you would get a real... I reckon when you film the Springboks, you would get exactly what they are like, whereas I always feel that the All Blacks are holding back.
I tend to agree with that. And maybe 2021. So yeah. This was obviously done in Lions year. And next year's a Lions year.
And let me say this. I don't think that because I think the Springboks are more interesting. Probably the opposite. I think that because they're basically all devout Christians and for the most part like to go to bed early and, you know, they're actually, yeah, they wouldn't need to try as hard as the All Blacks because they're about as clean living as you get until you get them, in which case they're not.
Yeah,
after a few beers.
There is an element of this where I get what you're saying. I think that there was a lot of platitudes and a lot of cliches being used. And maybe that was slightly put on, but I think it was only maybe dialed up from where they are. I actually think, generally speaking, on average, international rugby players, whatever nation, are far more boring on average than any normal person, and certainly any rugby player in generations gone by.
Well, I guess you're going to have to... There's going to have to be a part of you that deals with extreme stress. Now, you might not see it as extreme stress. Well, no, sorry. They might not see it as extreme stress. I guess us as casual observers of the game might not see it as extreme stress. But take Jared from accounts, right? And throw him onto a professional pitch. It's bloody stressful. I mean, it's an amazing thing. So when they're not playing that incredibly dangerous thing, which they get paid lots of money to do, what really, you know, what's going to match that? Where's the excitement?
Well, equally, to look the way they look, you have to be... It's like no one who's absolutely ripped who goes on Love Island, or the guys on Love Island, are dull as dishwater. Because all they do is work out. They've got no life.
That is not true, Tim. We did a whole series of podcasts because they did so much.
We'll have to again. Are they doing Love Island this year?
I hope so. They're incredibly complex characters. They're unbelievable in so many ways.
Yeah. But I mean, that's not to take away from the sacrifices that these guys make and the dedication that they show. That comes through through these documentaries. But it has departed, and I'm not complaining. It's brilliant, and we got an insight of it, but it has departed from the Living with Lions era. Yeah.
Can I finish off on a different documentary?
Of course.
Yeah.
Has anyone been watching The Last Dance with Michael Jordan? Not with Michael Jordan, about no, Michael Jordan.
No, I've got it next. I'm finishing Better Call Saul first.
I'm one episode in.
So, the first three episodes, I don't want to lie to you, Phil, they're good, but they're not great. And then you meet Dennis Rodman. Now that, and then I'll let you come back to me with the rest. But
I haven't seen the Aaron Hernandez one yet.
Don't watch that. Don't watch it. It's too dark. But the Dennis Rodman one, I mean, it's not, nothing's turned bad yet, at least. But maybe there is a way to be an absolute lunatic and play high-level sport.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, as you were saying that, Dennis Rodman's like way out there, but there are elite level sportsmen who I would love to see a documentary just following Tom Brady and the Gronk and Gronkowski about. Those are boys. What are
the most interesting rugby players?
Most interesting rugby players that you'd actually want to see a documentary on?
Yeah, who you think of actually, yeah, who are actually interesting though. So like, I think Tom Wood is a really interesting bloke. He can weld, yep. He chops wood, you know, he can craft things.
Mamuka Gorgodza, I would have loved to have seen a documentary on.
Yeah.
Yes,
I can imagine his training would be amazing. He'd probably just like, right, I'm going to do half an hour of wrestling with a bear now.
Rocky montages left, right, and centre with Gorgodza.
Presumably, until the age of, I don't know, whenever he showed up at Montpellier, the age of, I don't know, 25, he'd never met a man that could even come close to stopping him.
Yeah.
That must be a weird mindset.
Did you see
said no to him, was in the top 14?
So Tom Wood, I saw this weekend, has made his own barbells with wood.
Yes, I've seen that. It's quite cool, isn't it?
Very cool.
They can't be that heavy. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know. They looked pretty heavy.
Oh, I'm going to have to make an admission here, boys. I didn't stick to strict social distancing on Friday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I stole some beer kegs and then took them to the mechanics, who strangely remained open throughout all of lockdown, to see if he could get the damn thing open, which he could, and I filled it with sand for lifting.
I thought you were going to say I got him to put a car axle between two of them. So I could do deadlift with a couple of kegs.
No, but he could definitely do that. So I had noticed he's been working all through lockdown. I asked him, like, have you got much work? He said, nope, but I own a yard and I don't want to be in with a wife. In his yard for 8 weeks.
I found one go. I had to get an MOT because I didn't get it done before lockdown. I didn't realise I needed one. And so my car couldn't be included in the automatic 6 month extensions. Fortunately, there are garages open, so maybe I went to the same place.
Sensible.
Yeah. good old car.
Well, I broadly speaking enjoyed this. I think it sort of this documentary series petered out for me a little bit.
It did a little bit. You needed. The problem for the documentary was the season was the wrong way round for them.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of that season should have been the Lions tour. Now, obviously, you can't change it for the documentary, but they were building up to effectively nothing because they won the Rugby Championship with a few games to go. They cantered to a victory in the Rugby Championship halfway through the season. So what do you do?
I quite liked it because I knew after the first episode, I didn't need to watch the other three. I knew I already had it on lockdown.
The other five.
It doesn't really matter, does it? It could be 12. We know what's coming.
That's it. My favourite moment in the whole thing was, so episode 3 or episode 4, the first Bledisloe, I think it was, and Sonny Bill was describing the kind of nervousness, excitement, the terrifying feeling you get when you're about to step onto the rugby field, and then, but you don't want to let your mates down. And that bit for me, just that brief description of it, I loved it. I thought it was really, really powerful and accurate.
Yeah. Why people play the game, why they play hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Really simple explanation of why we do it.
We're brothers, bro. Got a rally ready, son, bro. You know, I have to live with these decisions for the rest of my life, bro. So I've got to make the right decision now.
We're brothers, bro. Could be the name of a great podcast. All the other names we've taken, but we're brothers, bro. Brother, yeah. There you go.
Cool.
Right. So next week.
Next week. Yeah. Homework for next week.
Easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Get a VPN. Get a Sky subscription if you don't have one. Borrow Sky Go password off a mate for a weekend. VPN and get Ooh. Creative.
Get creative.
But watch the cross of the codes double header, Bath v Wigan back in the day.
I genuinely can't wait.
We talked on last week's podcast about that Wigan backline, which featured that Wigan side, which featured Andy Farrell, Sean Edwards, Martin Afire, Chris Radlinski. And Gary Connolly, a whole host of other household names, rugby league legends, Jason Robinson. So this is going to be good. Real good.
Indeed. Right. Well, I guess we'll see you boys next week.
Yeah, unless we'll do.
Unless the lockdown is lifted.
Hmm. Yeah. Pubs and that won't be open, but...
No. Not for a while, I don't think.
No.
We'll see.
Right. Nice one, boys. Stay safe.
Oh, cheers, guys.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.